No, nah, that's true.
Hi.
What's up, man?
All right. We got to read a little bit of sponsorship here because they are what keeps the lights on and they are what make us able to host this lovely podcast you're about to listen to.
We love our sponsors, man.
You know who we love? We love our newest sponsor, Demented Brewing Company. Mm-hmm. Demented Brewing Company, an upcoming brewery based in Middlesex, New Jersey. Burlo, we were just there. All right. They make a variety of seasonally inspired, insanely flavorful ales. Mm-hmm. Okay. Listen, visit their tap room, their tasting room. It's awesome. There's murals of like this crazy art. It's amazing.
Yeah. They give you the tour before they let you drink. And
right. And there's 16 taps, Burlo. 16.
I think we almost tasted every single one. Every one was amazing, my friend.
We tasted every single one, and that's how we ended up destroyed by the end of the night. But 16 taps. There's a lot. There's two sodas. Tons of stuff to try. So get yourself a DD. Try every single one of them. Also, while you're there, check out the barrel program. Okay. Make sure to get details about their mug club. If you're listening to this podcast, just yesterday they released their highly anticipated strawberry cream ale.
I can't wait to try it.
Yeah,
man.
I want to try that too. We're gonna have to go pick some up. There's a new beer release, Burlo, almost every single Sunday. So if you're a craft beer fan and you're located close, or even if you're not, you want to take a day trip, just go pick something new up, get a growler. You know?
I mean, isn't that great? I mean, when you deal with like Coors or Budweiser, do they send out a beer every week?
No.
No, you're lucky if they do something different every 2 years, you know?
So if this sounds good to you, you want to try a good craft brewery, support them on their way up, check out DementedBrewing.com, DementedBrewing.com for more details. Which brings us to our next sponsor, Burlo, which is Trivia Revolution.
Always a fan of going now to Trivia Revolution.
You've played a few times. You've answered some interesting questions with some weird answers.
Yeah.
Go back to the Ahi Ahi episode. but anyway, Trivia Revolution is a New Jersey-based trivia company that seems to be getting accounts every single week. So they're not just based in one location. They're all over the state of New Jersey. Okay. Trivia Revolution combines craft beer and trivia.
I mean, that's such a fun night. You got nothing to do on a Tuesday. See where Trivia Revolution is at.
They're kind of like us. They combine little stupid games, trivia games, and drinking.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think they should come down and watch us podcast and get ass-faced, you know?
Yeah, that's correct. But Trivia Revolution, every week you can win brewery gift cards to New Jersey breweries such as River Horse, Cricket Hill, Ramstein, Climax, Demented, Flying Fish. You never know. You could win something. You could also win prizes that are towards your tab for the night, towards everything. So also, if you check out their Instagram or Twitter, there's a bonus item every single week that'll get you 5 points towards trivia.
Oh, nice.
Okay, so you could win. You can get an advantage just by checking your Instagram.
I haven't gone on there yet. I'm going to bring a gun. I'm hoping that's the object.
Yeah, only if you use it on yourself. Trivia Revolution, check them out on Instagram, check them out on Twitter, check them out on Facebook. Trivia Revolution, fueled by craft beer. Bringing us to Michael Burlo, our longest, our loveliest, our most authentic, down to the streets, grassroots movement, Wolf Nation.
Oh, nice, man.
I love Wolf Nation. WULF Nation, which stands for Wake Up, Live Free. Burlo, you're wolfing it a little bit right now.
Yeah.
Why don't you tell the audience a little bit about wolfing it?
Well, it's just, you know, living your life. I mean, this whole story talked about how when you're poor and you didn't get to shave, just like doing the things that you want to do in life. That's what's considered wolfing it.
Yeah. Tired of being held down, making your own way in this world. Wolf Nation. Check them out on Instagram. Check them out on Twitter. Check them out on Facebook. All sorts of apparel for men, women, children, dogs. All sorts of things coming up. Get in on the ground floor. It's only going up from here. Wolf Nation. Okay. And that's the end, man. That's the end. Burlo, let's get to this podcast.
I was good with just doing the sponsor thing.
Yeah. Well, we were hoping that that's what you will only be involved in the future.
What up? This is Clean Rock One. You're listening to Verbal Shenanigans.
But our shenanigans are cheeky and fun.
Yeah. I mean, his shenanigans are cruel and tragic.
Which makes them not shenanigans at all, really.
Evil shenanigans.
I swear to God, I'll pistol whip the next guy that says shenanigans.
Silencing my phone. So
Ladies and gentlemen, put your phones on silent.
Yeah, I like that you...
Yeah, we're going to do a little sweet jazz here tonight.
You softened up my intro because you know how much I love doing intros. So.
Well, hello!
Hey, guys! Welcome to the show.
I miss you.
I always get, like, chilled when I have to do the intro. I'm like always like, what do I say other than, hey, hello, welcome, bubba? So you grunting about reaching your phone in your pocket was... Help me break the ice a little bit.
I'm a pioneer. What can I tell you?
Pioneer. You know how Howard Stern like burped in the radio and the mic. Everyone was all upset. Like, oh my god, he's the pig. Now you're just opening another channel for radio.
I know, man. I mean, radio's been kind of dying as of late. I gotta bring it back, man. I gotta bring it back to the kids. You know.
So anyway, welcome to the show, Mike. Welcome back. Good to see you.
Good to see you too, my friend.
Been seeing a lot of you lately.
You're welcome.
Yeah, not just the show.
You just did my own grunt there when I said you're welcome.
You know what I can't get out of my head?
What's that?
The song, the Marlins Will Soar song from last week. Those of you who didn't tune in last week, Scott Stapp did a song for the Marlins, and I just can't get enough of it. Worthy enough to play a second show in a row.
I think so.
This might be our theme song. Come on, Marlins, make us proud.
He's starting to use my grunts.
Anyway, I just puts me in a good mood every time. Even the Marlins couldn't get someone that people like to get the song. Like, who does everyone hate?
Well, they look for cheap and figure nobody's going to listen to it, so Creed's the best answer for
that. Not for nothing. You're in Miami. You're thinking maybe like a Latin singer would be good to get to the audience.
Pitbull.
Yeah, Pitbull can do a song. No, let's get the guy that all white trash like. But anyway.
Basically, the people who would listen to it where you see him at the beach and you go, ugh.
Oh, God. There's still some of you left. I feel like Creed fans just probably transitioned to Nickelback fans.
Yeah.
And Nickelback fans are dying out slowly.
I think it's like a passing of the torch, you know, where you're like the white crappy group. You're like, here you go. We're done. Thank you, New Kids on the Block.
So we had a good weekend. We watched the fight. So this episode will be out after the fight. But we watched the fight, the McGregor fight.
Yeah.
Hell, awesome fights. Awesome fights. The Tate and Holm fight was awesome. She came out of nowhere, won it at the end.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of like a last-second win. It was really, saw her putting it in place and starting to get her on the ground. And like, oh, my God, she's going to put it in. Oh, my God.
Yeah, well, her big thing was she figured out what to do in the second round, and then she got kind of scared trying to, like, try to dive in there and get a sucker punch or something like that. So when they yelled, like, oh, 2 minutes left, it's like, all right, I'm either going to win this title and I'm never going to get another title shot again. So all for it.
Yeah. So she won. That was cool. And then the Conor fight, which was good. It was good.
He went for it.
I
he didn't win, but he went for it.
I told you before, I went from total mixed opinions on him because I just thought he was a cocky asshole. And he is.
Mm-hmm.
But there's something about him that you just – He's polarizing, man. He makes you want to watch fighting. And that was the highest pay-per-view ever, they said. Highest UFC.
Exactly. He just knows how to hit everybody's buttons, and he knows he's going to make that crowd either love him or hate him.
Now, great thing about him is how he took the loss. Said all the right things, said I'm humble and, I say all the crazy things, but I'm humble in victory, humble in defeat. He admitted what he did. He said, like... he was trying to take shots, and he realized that those shots would put down a 145-pounder, but not someone the size of Diaz, and he panicked, and that was it.
Yeah, he analyzed it, and he kind of just said to himself, it's like, all right, I'm just not ready for that right now. I mean, on both sides, to be fair, they got this together with 11 days ago, so it's kind of hard to say. Who knows how he would have trained if he had, like, when they get, like, 3 months' notice on these?
Yeah, sometimes more. Mm-hmm. But here's his response on, I think it was on Facebook or whatever. He said, I stormed in and put it all on the line. I took a shot and missed. I will never apologize for taking a shot. Shit happens. I'll take a loss like a man. I will not shy away from it. I will not change who I am. If another champion goes up two weights, let me know. If you're tired of me talking money, take a nap. I'll still be here when you wake up with the highest pay-per-view in the gate. Still talking multi-sevens. Thank you to the true support and fuck the hate that comes out of the woodwork. I love it all. It's still steak for breakfast. I've been here many times in my life in some form or another. I'll eat it all and come back stronger. Aldo, you're a pussy. Dos Anjos, you're a pussy. When the history books are written, I showed up. You showed up on Twitter. To the fans, never shy away from a challenge. Never run from adversity. Face yourself head on. Nate, I'll see you again.
That's inspiring. I challenged Nate Diaz to a fight.
That's a perfect response, man. Yeah. It's still Connor. You're still talking about money and eating steak for breakfast, but then calling guys pussies, but then also with a nice message. Never back down. Had to challenge.
I would have liked it if he just kept the cocky attitude even in the humbleness. And I'm a fucking tiger. I'm a fucking tiger. Diaz, he's a mega tiger, and that's the only reason why a tiger loses
to
a
lion,
mega tiger.
I'm a lion taking down a gazelle. Best quote was, me and Jesus are good. Gods recognize gods. Guy is shot. But I don't want to talk about the fight because the fight's been talked about on everything I've listened to so far in the last couple of days. But it was a good fight. And definitely last four fights or whatever, I've been really, like many people, just kind of, the UFC is the shit, man. It's like really like a fun social thing to do now. Like it's not just you watching it in your house. A lot of people want to see it.
It's, well, let's look at it. They make it Saturday evening, so, and even to a point where it's late enough where it's like, well, you got to go out, or you got to have a party if you want to see this. Dana White just pretty much sits back and goes, what does the fan want? All right, next match.
Boxing's dead. There's no direct competition besides other MMA things. Like, it's not where, like, oh, boxing's bad. Boxing's dead. You know, boxing's dead. It'll always be there, but the interest will never be the same.
I mean, they screwed themselves. I mean, they got like four different federations. They have like six different belts. It's, you can have a heavyweight champion and like three others. So it's just silly.
But so I've been really getting into the. Hello, Obi.
Hello, Daddy.
Obi's back. Yes, he is.
I'm going to talk to you now.
Barking on the line.
Daddy, there's a closed door.
Last night he was sleeping on me and I caught him dreaming.
Mm-hmm.
And he was like, with his eyes closed. Like, and then I like tried to wake him up. I'm like, buddy, buddy, buddy. And he's like, like, it took him like three or four attempts for me to wake him up.
No, I got this. Go back, go back.
What do you think a dog dreams about? Chasing something?
It's got to be, I mean, what else can they talk about? They don't have the mind instincts to have like a really crazy dream or anything.
How do you know? How do you know that?
I've been a dog scientist for many years. Listen, and I
just because you pet dogs and make voices for them doesn't make you a dog scientist.
Yes, you
dog, Charlie
Danny.
Day. I study bird law.
I mean, what else could they really do? They only know what they know.
I think my dog dreams about sleeping. He's like in, like, you know, like
Inception.
I was just gonna say, just like Inception, it's like these multi layers of him napping.
Buddy, wake up from your dream, Daddy. I'm in six of them.
So before the fight, though, we Burley, we did a show.
Mm-hmm.
You returned to stand up after a pretty long hiatus. You had that one show in like December or whatever, but overall, it's been a.
Yeah,
been a decent time off.
I was sad that CNN and Time Magazine wasn't there to cover it.
Yeah. Well, you know, they did that big article on Steve Martin doing stand-up for the first time in 35 years.
Mm-hmm.
So they didn't want two stories. This two of the exact same stories
to be
running
fair,
out.
I mean, me and Steve Ritchie, I kind of said, you know what, you know, don't steal his thunder. He kind of needs it.
Yeah, but you did well, man. It was
Thank you.
You chose the jokes that I know of yours that work, that are more well-written ones, that you know front to back to front, you know, which was smart. You didn't try to go
left, right.
You didn't try to go for, like, new ones or write new material real quick for your first time back.
I had a couple new ones there. I mean,
you know what I mean.
Yeah.
The ones that you know have hit, you know, have worked, and I thought that was a smart decision on your part.
Well, thank you. I mean, I played a little bit with the crowd. I mean,
you went up loose, which I was surprised. Like, it wasn't like that, got to get on the treadmill for 2 minutes, feel them out, and then you feel good. You went up loose, you felt good, you did a little improv, and then went into your set, which is nice.
Well, I think the reason I kind of got loose, I mean, it was one of those, we saw the crowd, we had a bunch of, like, 4 or 5 7 to 8 year olds. So the first thought is always, all right, do you do what you plan to do? Do you have to tailor it? Because you know the gentleman who run the place. I don't really know him, so I don't know how they would react to, the 8 year olds were crying and blah, blah, blah.
But. Yeah, I went up to the left of us, all cougars, like some kind of like meetup group with like very like old women with a lot of fur and diamonds and slick hair. And they were great. They were, you know, they were loud, but fun. To the right, parents and children. Very interesting crowd. But I went up and just went for it. I said, you know what? You kept your kid here. Yeah. Not that I'm gross. Like, I am definitely not. I wouldn't even call myself R-rated. Maybe PG-13 every once in a while. I'm not dirty. I don't do a lot of, like, sex jokes. But there's some undertones here and there, and that's going to happen. And there's... I had fun with them, though. I had a lot of fun with them. They were great for you. They were great for Mike Ciccoli.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And, line of the night, Mike Ciccoli. He said, there was the woman, like, I was making fun of. She had a big fur coat. I was making fun of her. Like, I think my opening line was, how are you, ma'am? And how was the thing that I was living before before you put that on today? But he went up and he said something along the line, your coat looks like every time you get a haircut, you just weave your hair into the coat. I was dying. I was like, this is great.
It was beautiful. I mean, even going into that, like you said, he does a lot of curse jokes. And you were kind of like texting him, like, I'm not sure, blah, blah, blah. But it came out well when we peeled them out. They were good. Nobody was like, oh, my kids, blah, blah, blah. They knew what they were getting into. Everybody had a good time. The improv was great. They were much more vocal than the last time I was there, which is always good. I mean, you get your crowds like, no, don't pick on me, when you got the other crowds, right here.
Yeah. So how'd you feel?
Felt great.
I can tell you felt great. But did it ignite like a spark again? We're going to be seeing some returns. You're going to start working on some jokes.
I'm going to start working on some stuff. I still have a schedule, which is kind of hard to get to open mics. I know I have to. That's no real excuse if I really want to. But I do plan on like booking some shows. I know where you can just ask them, hey, can you put me on the show? Just so I can keep in rhythm, go up there, try a couple of things, and get back into the groove of everything.
Yep. Yeah, I was happy because it looked like your old self a little bit.
Yeah.
Like the last time I saw you, I don't even remember. I think we did an open mic somewhere, and you were not yourself at all.
No.
You were just like, blech, really.
I think I remember the place. We were in the basement of a certain place. I'm not sure if we should.
We were in the basement at a place, and that was pretty seedy mic. But yeah, you were like, but it was nice to see it. But
thank you, man.
Let's transition real quick. It's guest time.
Woo-hoo-hoo-hoo.
I'm definitely gonna make a guest time. It's guest time.
We got a guest. We got the guest. He is the best, or she is the best. No.
That might be it.
Yeah.
I think you just I think you just solidified yourself.
It's kind of long after
you quit this show. We got a guest. I'm gonna put it to music. Maybe make your voice a little higher. You rhyme guest with guest, and then best with bet.
Yeah, I was in the moment.
Well, improv jam with Mike Berlew opening for them.
All right, we need a thing, a dog. All right, we need another thing, another dog.
Second dog. did you collect things as a kid?
I had a little coin collection for a while. I did enjoy that. We've been over the baseball cards that my grandmother sent away to somebody else.
Yep.
Trying to think if I did anything else. I think those were pretty much my two things.
Yeah, I had a couple like mild collections, cards. Pogs when I was very young. Modern days, like adult, the only thing I really collect is pint glasses from like different places I've been.
That's cool. A lot of people do that in shot glasses.
I like the pint glasses, and I used to collect like dogfish head bottles of all the different, I don't know. It looked good in my bar at the time.
Mm-hmm.
But we got a guy who is a serious collector. And I'll tell you how I got in touch with him when we get him on. But his name is Harley Spiller. Okay, Harley Spiller. And this just proves, man, the internet is literally the most powerful tool in the entire world. Okay, because when you hear how I got in touch with him, and some of his he's a serious collector. Put it that way, he's got records for collecting all different things. I don't know a ton about him, which is going to be kind of fun to find out. So why don't we just give him a call? Here's Harley Spiller.
We gotta go.
We're not Skyping, so
all right.
So the odds are pretty high. Uh-oh.
You might have jinxed us. Maybe he's collecting phone rings.
Hello.
Hey, is this Harley Spiller, a.k.a. Inspector Collector?
It is indeed. Good evening.
That is awesome. I am Scott Brennan. This is my cohort, Michael Berlew, here. Welcome to Verbal Shenanigans.
Evening, officer.
Inspector. He's not an officer.
Well, it's a form of officer, right?
I don't know if that is. But anyway, thank you for popping on the show.
It's not a very serious title.
Oh, it's not.
But I like officer. I think I should become officer inspector collector.
See that?
See, that's a little too much. That's a little too much, man.
The OIC is on the phone.
The OIC working for the FBI. But anyway, Harley, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
I was just I didn't even tell the audience yet how I really found you, and I said just how powerful the internet is, because this is the story behind it. So I'm watching Netflix by myself in my underwear with my dog, and I put on a documentary called The Search for General So. And very early on in the documentary, they're interviewing a man who has, I believe it was over 40,000 Chinese food menus from all over the world. And I go, okay, there's a guy who would be perfect for the show. So I rewind it, and I see, like, your lower third, and I'm like, okay. I reach out, and I got in touch with you pretty quick. We talked a little bit, and here we are today chatting. So, yeah.
I'm excited for the shenanigans.
Well, there's not that many shenanigans. You have to provide the shenanigans when you come on.
They were verbally let go before you started. You should have told us to save a couple for you.
So, Harley, let's talk a little bit. Let's start. Why don't we start at that General So documentary and your collection of? Now you have a collection of many things, which we'll get to in a minute. But 40,000, is that correct?
No one knows, but we're going to find out. Here's what happened. I started collecting menus in 1981, and at the end of 2014, I got them into the hands of the University of Toronto Scarborough. So they are now the owner of my Guinness World Record-setting collection.
Oh, so you got rid of it.
I placed it in a new home, sir.
Oh. So, Harley, where the hell did this idea start? Or what the hell inspired you to do this?
I didn't tell you I'm from Buffalo.
From Buffalo.
I'm from Buffalo, New York originally. I came to New York City, and Chinese food, which I was familiar with, I thought, was really not what I thought it was. And there was Chinese restaurants all over the place, and they had menus hanging outside their shops for the taking. And I took lots and lots.
Now, why though? Why? What? Why? Because you liked them, the look of them, the. I don't know.
I read them. I was a fresh out of college. I was an English major at Northwestern outside Chicago, and I came to New York. And here's something I'd never heard of. Tender bean curb. instead of tender bean curd. And so the typos were funny. The misusage was funny. The foods were interesting. I thought squid was in a bottle of formaldehyde in the lab. I had no idea it was edible.
Okay.
All right.
So this was a new culture for me, and it was for the taking. And I started cooking for myself for the first time, actually cooking for the myself and the friends I was staying with. So I had to cook well, you know. I couldn't just slop around. My room and board depended on it. and New York's an expensive town. I'm a museum worker. That's not a high-flying salary for most of us.
Right.
So I shopped in Chinatown, where salmon was half price of Zabar's. Probably still is.
Okay. So I'm still not clear on where the obsession with...
Were you that bad of a cook? Where they're just like, go to every Chinese restaurant and learn from them.
It was like one of those scenes in like comedy movies where he's got to cook for everyone. He runs out the back door and grabs the Chinese food and presents it as his own.
Don't come in the kitchen! I'm making a souffle! No noise! Don't come in here for 20 minutes!
Yeah, because Harley, let's be serious here. Okay, grabbing one or two, I can understand that, you know? Two, three, four, five is a big difference from close to 40,000 menus.
It's close to 10,000.
Then I got my info wrong. That's it? All right, the interview's over.
I bet you didn't even look in Mexico.
I really pulled that one over.
That was a great show, everybody. Everybody, round of applause for Harley Spiller. Round of applause.
So they were free reading material. About a year later, I found my own apartment. I woke up in a pouring rainstorm at like 6:30 on a Saturday morning. I thought if I called any of my new friends, they wouldn't be my friends for long. I wasn't going outside, so I said, let me alphabetize my menus. I had maybe an inch or two of them, you know, 100. And that exercise... That exercise was interesting because Miraculous Mandarin had changed their name to Sizzling Szechuan. They put a few dishes in red that used to be in black, added a few dishes, and now they were trendy and new.
Okay.
But it was the same place. So if you alphabetize Miraculous and Sizzling, you lose that thread. And this is before FileMaker Pro databases, you know? So I spent hours doing this, and I thought, well, this is like a library science project or something. It's interesting, and there's culture in here. At that point, I started going out of my way to get it. In 1989, I applied for an exhibition. I got it, put on the show in 91, and it was a huge hit. I estimated at that time I had 5,000, and so I kept going. People started sending me stuff.
That's awesome.
People bring me.
The odd thing at the exhibition, they served pizza.
we had those pink, green, and white shrimp crackers and Remy Martin VSOP cognac.
What the
Thank
hell?
You very much.
That's awesome.
Remy donated a case for the opening.
Wow.
It's a favored drink in Hong Kong.
Wow. That's funny. Like, I remember, like, my brother had a huge collection of CDs. Huge, huge collection of CDs. But the idiot would organize them in put them in alphabetical order, but in those shelves and not leave any space.
Mm-hmm.
So let's say you get a new CD. It's, the Stone Temple Pilots. Now you have to move everything up, you know, like everything. So it was always this massive, like, undertaking to constantly alphabetize them. Like, the key was to leave space between, like, letters, you know, like leave a couple empty spots so you could move a couple over.
So, you kind of have to do it if you want to keep control of this stuff. There's hoarders, you know, they go off the deep end right there. That can, you know.
Yeah. Mm. That could throw someone off, you know. into.
I mean, when you misplace your wallet, you go nuts looking for it. If you love your rock and roll, you're going to be pissed if you lose sticky fingers.
So, I like it. Talking about the movie just for a second here, I thought the movie was pretty cool.
Yes.
How'd you get involved in that?
The movie was, they called me and they said they were interested in General Tso's Chicken, and I've had these calls every couple of months. I get a contact out of the blue from you guys, from somebody about Chinese menus.
Right.
I'm not Chinese, by the way.
I couldn't tell.
So
the proper term is Mandarin.
But you know, but by definition, dictionary definition, if you are what you eat, then I am Chinese, because I eat a lot of Chinese food. Anyways, they called me. I didn't think much about it. They said, come over. I said, come over. They came over. They had four or five people who did the thing. And I really thought not happening. And then it was like 2 years or something, and I get an email saying, you want to come to the opening, to the, you know, the screening, the first. And I thought, oh, gee, and I look, and it's at Tribeca Film Festival. I go, that's
nice.
Pretty cool.
Yeah, it got high ratings, the documentary.
It's doing very nicely. It's a fun film, I think.
Yeah, it's a great
I'm
idea.
Happy to be involved with
very
it.
Good idea.
So that was fun. You know, in the movie, I show I don't just collect the menus. I collect in a broad range. So I had I showed a infant's toy, a wooden Chinese food toy. And in the movie also is a guy named Andy Koh, who wrote a book called Chop Suey. He had given my son that toy. So I'm sitting with Andy Koh and my son, and I out myself in the movie. So that I took this right away from my kid before he was even born. He never saw the thing. And I'm sitting with my son. He didn't care, and Andy barely remembered. So it was funny, though.
So how did you get the mass majority of yours? Did you travel the country? Did you, like, put out something on the internet? Hey, send me a Chinese menu.
The vast majority came from Manhattan.
Really?
From 1981 to 2013, 14.
Now, are you?
And that, I mean, that's the and then Brooklyn, and Queens, and the Bronx and Staten Island is mostly the metropolitan area, but I took from everywhere. In '91, when I had my show, I wanted one from each of the 50 states. My sister wrote a bunch of letters to the states I didn't have, and to the Chambers of Commerce, and gathered some that way.
God, think about it's so different now. Like, all you have to do is send, like, an email or something. That you, like, have to write, like, 50 different letters at least, you know, like, to get different states.
It was now people bring them to me. But then, you know, along came eBay. What was that, 97, 98, something like that?
Something like that.
Then I jumped on eBay, and I went broke. I zeroed my bank account. Buying Chinese menus. Who would have thought that?
Who would have thought somebody was smart enough to put the menus up to begin with? maybe I'll get a quarter. $25 bid!
It was basically just one of your shitty friends just putting Chinese menus up, knowing you'd be the only one to buy them. Oh, yeah, no, the minimum is $20.
That might be true. My friend Matt Weber, that he bought me a menu on there, and I was wondering, like, that was really generous of him. Maybe I should see him. Maybe he's going to set me up with an easy knockdown.
Some dude got
there was four main competitors out there. There was a guy in Hong Kong. There was a guy upstate New York. I don't know where there was a guy in Delaware, I think. and we battled each other and drove the prices up. I was. This was nuts.
It's awesome.
That's a movie I want to see about you four guys fighting over the, no, 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 I need the South Dakota Chinese menu.
It was over stuff like that. I had a tiff with the guy I got burned because there was a matchbook. I had thousands of pieces of paper with Chinese restaurant stuff, and there was a matchbook that from Oklahoma, and it had a drive-through Chinese, and it was nothing in my whole collection said drive-through except that matchbook. And I colluded. I said, please don't bid on this one. I really want it. And I'll let you slide on anything
Wait. How much are these things going for?
And then at the last second, he sharped me.
Bastard.
He sharped me at the last second, eBay thing. And then I fired off a email. I was so mad. And then, like, 7-8 months later, I get an envelope from who knows what, and that matchbook is in there.
Wow.
I couldn't believe it. And I emailed him and said, wow, thanks. And he said, I couldn't do it. I was wrong.
Wow.
And that guy's nice. He wrote a book about, he collects Chinese restaurant postcards. And he wrote a book about that. I went to his reading at the library on East Broadway, and we met up, and that was nice.
You got to tell me, how much, two things. How much is the average menu going for, a rare menu, and what is the most you've ever spent on a Chinese food menu?
Okay, 95% were free. But the most I ever spent was $200.
Jesus! You never thought about just ordering the food and getting a menu with it?
Driving there?
The week after I dropped that, I published a story on that restaurant and that menu, tied it to Luke Sant's book, Low Life, and Old New York History, and I got a job doing an after-work program for some .com, and I made $400, so I had $100.
There you go. Yeah, you just never know, man.
Yeah, so, today, I don't know, I don't go on there, but they easily get $200. The most expensive one would be something like signed by Elvis Presley, a dinner in his honor. Like that. Those are the ones that King.
All right.
John F. Kennedy's inaugural thing signed by Marilyn Monroe or something would those things. They're not menus at that point. It's Elvis or somebody.
All right. I got a Chinese menu from Woodbridge, New Jersey, signed by both Verbal Shenanigans hosts. How much you got?
I got anything, man. I would do anything for that.
You gonna pay for that, boy?
Over there now. If we get cut off, I'm swimming across the Hudson. Wow! I hope you signed in disappearing ink.
Joke's on him. It's a forgery, Mac Berlew. So from doing
but,
that,
the whole thing is, people think I'm nuts. They laugh at me all along. But meanwhile, the whole point of it is people. This is what I'm realizing after 35 years of this. It's the connections you make. It's the guy you bid against on eBay. It's you guys calling me and having a yuck tonight.
Yeah.
And it's the food. And I know a lot. I it's hard for me to believe, but it's true. I have expertise in Chinese food. I know more than most Chinese people because most Chinese people know their grandma's cooking. They know one thing. I'm not Chinese, so I'm not elite. I don't have allegiance to grandma's Fujianese style. I try them all.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So I have a broader, China's huge, and the food is incredibly different, north to south, east to west.
Awesome.
Now, from there, where did you go with collecting? Was that your first, big collection, or did you have, side ones that went into that? Where did you go from there?
Oh, probably all of us, when we were 2 years old, walked the beach or the park and picked up twigs or shells or rocks or, chestnuts.
Chestnuts.
They were nice. The horse chestnuts in Buffalo, I used to love those things. Have a big bowl of them at home. But
to be fair,
I'm a museum professional. I like collections. I work with collections. A collection is worth more than the sum of the parts. You can draw inference and learn. And I'm a this horrible thing called the lifelong learner, and I'm always curious and wondering. So putting 20 different biodegradable spoons together on a table and looking at them and comparing them is fascinating to me and to many. So I work in museums, and I'm proud to say that just last year I my first book was published by Princeton Architectural
Press. That's awesome.
It's on my collection of mutilated money.
Yeah, I saw that on your site. What do you mean by mutilated money?
Why? You know words like verbal and shenanigans, and you don't know what mutilated means?
No, I know what mutilated means, but why are you doing that to money? Because if you're going to mutilate money, I'll take some before you do it.
Here's what happened. I don't do it. I get it. I find it and take it. My cousin is a little younger than me. We bet who would be taller when he was 21 and I was 25. I beat him by half an inch. He came over the next day and bet me $50 who would be taller when I turned 50.
Okay.
Figuring, you know, in your early 20s, you think 50 is the end of the line, and you'll be all stooped over. And so I figured I'd lose. His dad was 6'6". So I started saving beat-up pennies and, you know, the nasty corroded ones you want to get at the supermarket. And I just threw those in a bowl, and I was going to pay him. And then one day, one of these pennies was beautiful. The green corrosion was prettier than the Statue of Liberty. And I said, screw Kenny, I'm keeping this stuff. I'll pay him with a check. So I'm a collector. I have other collections. And I've been trying to write a book. The Chinese menus I tried real hard to write a book on. I couldn't get a publisher. Self-publishing, my stuff's too weird. If someone else doesn't believe in me, I'm not risking. I know I'm on the edge here. So I tried Chinese menu. I tried my collection of newsstand advertising, mostly cast iron paperweights from the 1950s that read the names of the different publications and lots of other material about newsstands. All I thought right. That would be a hot topic. The New York Times, they hired me to write an op-ed, a full page on the back of the Sunday Week Review, color illustrations of my collection. So I thought that, wow, New York Times, not enough for a book, pal. You got to have a gazillion followers and blah, blah. Anyways, there's these hipsters downtown that run a place called The Museum. You heard of this? It's got four M's, two at the front and the back. It's an old elevator shaft on Cortland Alley below Canal Street. Doesn't go up and down, but they trimmed it with white paint and red velvet shelves, and they show what they call the footprint of humanity. And so little bits and pieces. It's not the Museum of Natural History, but they got a broken fossil or this and that.
Huh.
And they found me in my offbeat collections, and they came over here to Moch, the Museum of Choking Hazards, which my wife thankfully built for me.
The Museum of Choking Hazards.
Sure, it's spelled with two Z's, like Dukes of Hazzard, you know?
Kids are a minute free.
So they came over here, and out of all this stuff, they said the mutilated coins is what they wanted to show. And then when they showed it, and it was good fun, and when I went to pick it up, the guy said, you should write a book about it. I said, go on. He said, it's Occupy Wall Street. People are thinking about it. You got an alternate take. You're not looking at money as a tool. You're looking at money as an object, as an art piece, as an evidence of the footprint of humanity. And so I went back to this publisher that I'd been rejected by twice because I would have to lose. And they bit, and here I am, a published author and an expert on mutilated money.
There you go.
Now, you ever put the pennies on the railroad tracks to see how that happens?
I never personally did that. I was too chicken. I'm certainly too chicken now. But someone gave me some after my book came out. Someone gave me some. But the coolest thing about that is when Abe Lincoln died, his caisson drove back from Washington to Springfield, and it went like 1 mile an hour or something down the track, and people came out and pay homage, right? Mm-hmm. And they put pennies on the track to be rolled over by Lincoln's funeral train.
So they were trying to assassinate Lincoln in all sorts of ways.
Yeah. They're chanting John Wilkes Booth, John Wilkes Booth.
JWB. All right, so give us a list of the collections you have.
There's about 80 collections.
All right, well, give us
number 57.
Just give us a. I'll tell you when to stop.
Okay, I got yellow pencils, white plastic spoons, New York City Metro cards. I have heavy tags from airplane luggage. I have fruit pairing devices. My Mr. T collection has been donated.
See, that's
to
cool.
African American history in Chicago.
And you got to meet Mr. Gustavo. T, right?
I met Mr. T. I was live on stage at Jimmy Kimmel with him, NBC, nationwide, baby. That was fun.
That's awesome.
Hmm. He said, don't eat before you go on, son. It makes you docile.
Wait. So far, some collections sound cool. White plastic spoons, dude?
Okay, so that was one I started collecting to see if any sense could arise out of an idiot collection, a stupid, dumb, nothing collection. And it did. It ends up being about ecology and waste, and why do I have 1,000 different white plastic spoons when one, you know, and once I realized this, I put one in my bag. I've had it for like 4 years.
But
couldn't
I just go to the store and buy a box of 1,000 white spoons right now?
Yeah.
Yes, but mine are all different.
Yeah. All right, keep going.
And so it becomes an exercise in design. You know, when you reach super high wine tasting levels, you drink with a black glass and you can't see the color of the wine. And so when you take all color and material out, they're all white and they're all plastic, it gets, the differences stand out and it gets interesting.
That was a Donald Trump quote, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Oh, sorry.
All right, go ahead. Keep going. Let's hear some more.
I have spoons for uses other than eating. my favorite being an earwax removal spoon.
Mm-hmm.
I have rubber bands that
you never ate with that spoon
collect.
By mistake, did you?
Rubber bands is not a good thing to collect because they dry up after a while.
They smell weird too.
My collection of paper clips dating back to the 1850s is destined for the Archer M. Huntington Library and Museum.
That's awesome.
On the West Coast. It's going to go alongside Dr. Henry Petrosky's papers. He's written a book called The Pencil. It's 450 pages, and he's written a book on paper clips as well. So
I work with the guy who is obsessed with pencils. Like, obsessed with the design of pencils, collecting, like, the finest pencils and historical pencils from the 30s. And it's actually kind of interesting. I'm not going to lie. It's kind of interesting. But then he gets a little weird, like, talks to me too much about the pencil. I'm like, go away, Ron.
You know, collectors are nerds for their thing. And you can't be in the room with them. I mean, this coin collecting thing, right? Like, I'm not really a numismatist. You know, I have a coin collection from when I was a boy, but I never took it that seriously. It's not valuable in any standard sense. But to write this book, I wanted to be correct, so I started asking questions and going to numismatic things, and, oh, man, it's definitely boring.
Now, is there
you know, and I like it, so...
Is there?
You can tell me to shut up anytime.
Well, I want to ask you a question. So. Yeah. No, go on, go on.
I have all my passports and all my family's passports. I've saved those. I think those are really
I found
a few passports. Twice I've found passports on the sidewalk, and I return them. Oh, here's what I have. I collect found ID cards, and I try to return them. And I lost my wallet once. I said that at the beginning. That was a traumatic, and a lady returned it, and I was just so happy. And she had a big collection of masks behind her desk. So I bought her a mask, and I said, if I ever find someone's ID, I'm going to try to return it, you know?
Yeah.
So I tried, but then you can't return Roberto Alvarado because there's 800 Roberto Alvarados in Staten Island. So I got his New York State license.
There's one Roberto walking around like, oh, Inspector Collector, please help me. Please help me.
I just want to go to work. No ID.
I just want cerveza. Please give me ID back.
I returned one to a young lady and had some. We started going dancing together. That was
Whoa.
Fun.
Inspector, getting it done.
That sounds like a great pickup line. I'm going to steal some woman's ID and then try to date her.
Mike,
you've done that many times.
If anybody knows, Naresh Kumar Bimjibai Hadalia, I've got his temporary visitor pass.
Little do you know, coming on the podcast, Rakesh Bimjibai Jinobar. Welcome to the show.
And thank you. I'm so glad you found it. I've been looking around all day.
Now, has there been a collection that somebody recommended you? Just like, no, I don't want to do that.
I've stopped collecting. I started it, and friends joined in, and it was too much. Is collecting articles about wacky collections. Got to be too much. But my biggest collection these days is.
Human heads.
A list of places where I've placed my collection.
Okay.
My newsstand stuff is at the New York State Museum in Albany, the nation's first and largest state museum.
See, that's really cool.
And it's nice. My archives of my parents' advertising business is headed to the Smithsonian next month.
How great is that?
For their Museum of American History. It's just thrilling. Thanks for saying so.
I think it's great, and we're coming up against the clock here, but I got one more question. So you've been collecting. You have these amazing different things. Where, you know, first off, where has it taken you? Is there times you sit back and go, wow, like just me collecting these, insert thing here, spoons, whatever, has taken me to meet this person or seen this person or some kind of event or come on this amazing podcast one day, and then, like, but where has it taken you? And, like, do you still enjoy it? Second, I also want to know, where do you keep all this shit? And are you married? Three questions.
My wife built the Museum of Choking Hazards.
That's
she
awesome.
Remains my wife.
Great.
So it's a room in our home. It's got shelves. It's got a 12-foot-long table with a big glass drop cabinet in it so I can have exhibits.
It's awesome. So the wife is into it. She's supportive.
Well,
she divorced him, but she doesn't want half that crap.
She doesn't
like
want her bones collected.
I'm on the hoarder line, you know, so she's keeping it real. I get just as much joy. I get more joy out of placing a bunch of artifacts in a permanent home.
I think that is cool.
Than gathering it myself. It's really so. You know, you could ask me for 35 years, I would have said never getting rid of the menus. They're too cool. They're too much fun. It's cooler to have them in a place where they're gonna digitize them and have scholars from around the world think about them and use them.
That is, like, I'm not even kidding. That is legitimately really cool.
Now, has she ever seen you, like, staring at someone like a pair of toenail clippers and be like, no.
Knock it off.
No.
People, initially, a barf bag convention was going on. And people sent me that. And that kind of pisses me off because there's not that much intelligence that comes out of that, and they think I'm just a joke. And it is a unusual and fun livelihood. Where has it taken me? Not very far to the bank, and I don't go to the bank enough, but I'm satisfied in a lot of other ways. It's museums are a beautiful profession, and when you give something to most gifts to museums, you have to give money behind it to care for that thing.
Hmm.
And I don't have that money behind it, so I have to use my museum skills to help them with preparation checklists and packing for free delivery. I know how it works. The State Museum and Albany took my stuff, but they wanted a newsstand. Okay, they wanted a vintage newsstand. They didn't have one of those. They got an A-train. They got a fire truck from the World Trade Center.
Yep.
They got a carousel. They didn't have a newsstand. I got the city to talk to the state, to talk to Mahmoud Sapan from Jackson Heights, who owned a newsstand on 47th and Broadway in Times Square.
And you had his ID.
Thank you, sir. Now, if you only have a spoon that I could use for earwax, that'd be wonderful.
So, and they, at 3 a.m. on a July summer night, they jacked that out of the ground, and it was floor of the museum at 9 a.m. And my parents' name is sitting there, the Mortimer Spiller Company, and it's real nice.
That is awesome. Harley,
buy my book and get more of this unbelievable verbal shenanigans.
Well, I'm going to give
it available everywhere. Finest books are sold, man.
Oh, all right, hold on. First off, Harley, when I even said to Mike here, I said I don't know what we're getting into with this guest because, you know, like I found some things on you, and you know, like we have a lot of different guests and. I'm not even like blowing smoke. Like you were a lot of fun, and you make like I love having people like you on because you take something that sounds to the average person like oh my god that's crazy, and you turn it into you, it's amazing to see how it's taking you places, how it taps into history and things like that. So, one, I want to thank you for coming on, and two, the second question before you get it is where can people go to see your stuff? Where can people go to communicate with you?
Thank you very much. I'm going to be at the Mott Haven branch of the New York Public Library with my mutilated money collection and also showing counterfeits and how to detect them. Coming up, you can go to inspectorcollector.com and get the information there. And you can write to me at ic@inspectorcollector.com. And send those cards and letters, but menus, they go to Canada,
I see what you did there. Harley, thank you so much for coming on, and this will be up.
Thank you so much, Verbal Shenanigans.
All right, that was Mr. Harley Spiller.
Very interesting, very interesting.
I like to be honest and like, mm-hmm. Dead serious. That was a way more interesting interview than I thought it would ever be.
He loves his craft. He doesn't take it too seriously, where he can laugh at himself. And those are some of the best guests.
And
the
that's
ones
our show.
That are unique,
that's our show.
But can still laugh at what they're doing.
And that's a show. Passionate, but mm-hmm. like with a sense of humor. So I, you know, like we've had guests on which are like bigger guests and like they have no personality. So it was nice. You know, it was totally nice.
Should we list them out?
No, we should not.
Oh, okay.
We want to have them on again.
Yeah. Fun fact, Chris Cornell saw his spoon collection and then wrote a song about it. It was called Black Hole Sun.
Oh, it wasn't Spoon Man?
That would have made more sense. I don't know why he did that.
Wait, did you just go for the joke and call it Black Hole Sun when the song was Spoon Man?
No, I actually went for the joke as the obvious answer is Spoon Man. Oh, ergo, okay, I said good, Black Hole Sun.
I thought you actually messed up.
No.
I was like,
I'll own it if I messed up. No.
All right. For a second, you played that very well because I really thought you messed up for a second. I was like,
Berlou?
But I guess we'll go right into it. The other day we were talking at the bar, and you had lit the pencil on fire by mistake.
Not by mistake. I was playing around.
Okay. Well, you were playing around. And I said to you, well, okay, people, I host a trivia thing every week, and Berlou sometimes comes down and plays. And I looked over, and he was, like, lighting a pencil on fire, playing with the fire. I said, Berlou, you're probably one of those kids who should not be left alone home because you'll probably light the house on fire. And you said, I got a story for that. Now, we had Augie Carton on last week, so things we had a lot of material last week. But I thought about this. I have to hear this.
Yeah, so so my best friend when I was growing up lived next door for a little while when I was in South Brunswick. But he was off doing something, so I was actually playing around with his younger brother. And when we're trying to figure out stuff to do, and we're in his father's garage, and we're just like, yo, there's a bunch of liquids in here. Let's just start mixing things together.
So, sometimes his songs hit, and then sometimes I hit play by mistake.
Yeah. So, we're just like grabbing like different cans. What's in here? I don't know. It says oil. All right, let's pour it in this bucket.
Oh, my God.
And we were pouring different things in the bucket. And eventually the goal was, well, let's cook it to see what happens. His father caught us prior to said plan.
Ooh. Dude, you probably would have blown the garage up or whatever the hell you were.
It would have been a possibility.
If you're dumping oil and other chemicals into some vat of horribleness.
It was a bucket. Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I mean, we didn't even know where the matches were. I mean, it was all talk. Like, yeah, we'll cook it to see what happens.
This was at your friend's house or your house?
Yeah, my friend's house.
Oh, if it was your house, they probably strapped the matches in a safe somewhere with armed guards hanging out.
But they found the bucket, and needless to say, they asked him about it, and he told us the story. So he got grounded for a day. I got grounded for 2 days. I thought that was a little unfair of me, but,
Let's call Miss Berlou. that would be hilarious if we called your mom. Listen, I got an issue.
Yeah. Remember back when I was 8 years old and you punched me for 2 days instead of one?
Remember when I was in the garage singing this in front of a thing of gasoline?
Which is odd, considering when the song came out.
Oh. Yeah. It was okay. I have a similar story. I wasn't trying to melt anything, but me and my I told you the one time, but it was so long ago that any of our listeners other than Dom have no idea where I used to sneak out of my friend's house. We used to go for walks in the middle of the night, like 3, 4 in the morning.
Uh-huh.
For some reason, we always went out barefoot. Okay. And one day we decided all the newspapers were coming out.
I remember this story.
And, like in the morning when they throw the newspaper on the lawn, we took all the newspapers, started a bonfire in the park. Cops show up. I run away, and one cop yells, I'll never forget this, stop or I'll fucking shoot you. And he didn't shoot me, but we ended up, like, his house was on the left, and we went right. We had to go all the way down, like, a mile or two and come back, and we looked down the street, and there's a fire trucks there. Now, the fire was, like, if you took a match to a newspaper, it was basically that big. There's a fire truck and, like, 5 cops, and we were so friggin' frightened, but in the end, so I just never, we got back. I had, like, thorns in my feet and rocks, and it was disgusting.
So this is how the Flintstones walked around in the day.
And then I never forget, we heard the doorbell ring at 7 in the morning. We're like, we're done. We both look at each other, and like his like 6-year-old cousin came popping through the door, like, hello. Like, oh.
You're like, we didn't mean to start the fire. Hey, guys.
Wait, what did you say?
Hey, guys.
No, before that.
I don't think I want to repeat that because it might show up in another episode one day.
No. Before that, real quick, getting off topic, we have the Shenanigans Showdown going on.
Oh!
One of the challenges was we didn't start the fire.
Oh, yeah.
Let's see how you're doing, Berlo. Here we go.
I haven't even... We didn't start the fire.
Would you like to do it with the lyrics in front of you and see how you do?
Yeah, let's...
All right, I'm going to turn my computer around. Okay. Right. Tell me when you can see it.
Yeah, I can see it.
Are you ready?
Let's go.
All right.
This intro is pretty long.
This was not planned, by the way. This literally just came out of Berlo saying we didn't light it on fire.
We didn't start the fire! Dorothy, Red China, Johnny Ray, South Pacific, Walter Winchell, Joe Maggio, Richard Nixon, Studebaker Television, North Korea, South Korea, Marilyn Monroe. I caught up there.
You can't catch up. You have to say them in when they say Joe, yeah. Joe.
H-Bum, Sugar Ray, Penny Bomb, D&R, and the catcher in the rye. Eisenhower vaccine. England's got it.
Now you got it. Now you got it. Okay. You're settling in. All right, here you go. You got to nail this, man. You got to nail this. Oh, my God. Just stop. Just stop.
Yeah, I haven't
you
been
sound like you can't
one.
Read.
Well, he's saying...
Joseph, yeah.
Well, he's... If you watch it, he's saying the lyric, and then the words pop up, and you're like, what?
Just admit you can't read.
I can read.
Get off of that water bottle, you fat dog. But anyway, if you wonder what the hell were we just talking about, we have the Shenanigans Showdown, which is going down all year long. We've been a little slow on it, but there's some plans in the future, very, very close.
Yep,
I got a couple things going.
I got one coming up pretty soon.
Yes. So it is a showdown where we just challenge each other all year long for a certain amount of points. The winner gets bragging rights and has to take the loser to Medieval Times and drinks, and it should be a good time.
Yeah, 25 to 10 so far. The barrels.
Yep, the barrels. Okay, I got a couple of things here.
All right, shoot.
I got a couple of things. Let me just check our time. Yeah, we're good or whatever. I don't even care anymore about the time. If you're just like, just end already, just stop the episode.
Yeah.
Remember you gave me a quiz a long time ago about who said it, Frank from Always Sunny or Chris Christie, was it?
I think it was Donald Trump.
Oh, man. Donald Trump. Well, I have one. Who said it, Donald Trump or Hitler?
Ooh.
Or Hitler, you know, because, you know, he...
Yeah, I don't want to go whole political, but yeah, he's kind of close.
Yeah, he's not far. Mm-hmm.
But you kind of notice how he, like, after he says something outrageous, and if not everybody goes with him, it's like, oh, I didn't mean that. Oh, we can negotiate. Blah, 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 blah.
We're in a bad spot, man. We're in a bad spot where the Republican debates are at a point where it's just like watching Maury Povich or something. It's just like, oh, snap.
They had a dick reference to decide who's the... ruler of the free world.
I always
a
think about
dick
that.
Reference.
I always think about that. Imagine like Israel, right? Like our mm-hmm. quote unquote allies, and they're in like civil war and war going all over the place. And they see who's going to be the next president, and Donald Trump's going, "My dick is huge. Don't worry about that.
My hands aren't small. Why are we having this conversation?"
Like the Republican Party, the only guy that looks sane is John Kasich.
Mm-hmm. And he's distant fourth.
Yeah, and he's a career politician, so you know he's just playing. He can't
win his own state.
Yeah, and you know the angle is, hey, just be very different from them. Maybe we can get some votes. Ted Cruz gives me the heebie-jeebies.
Mm-hmm.
Heebie-jeebies. Religious, a maniac, eats his own booger. You saw that, right?
No, I didn't see.
He was debating, and something white came out of his nose, and he randomly,
nice.
Ate it.
See, that's the one thing that kind of scares me about Trump not winning because then he'll go independent, and then it's Cruz versus Clinton versus Trump. It's three stages of hell.
Yeah, like which one? If you
all right. Yeah. Do I burn my face off?
Yeah.
Do I get decapitated or do I get eaten by a monkey?
Yeah, it's really bad. And then the Democratic debate, Bernie's somewhat sane. He's a little too left for me sometimes, but Hillary is just a disaster too. That woman will say anything to please a crowd.
Mm-hmm.
Anything. Like, it doesn't matter what issue it is. As long as she knows the majority, she'll say that answer.
Well, I would say both of them do that. Like, Bernie at one point says, we're going to get rid of racism. I'm like, what? What?
Yeah.
You have that capability? What?
I feel like if Bernie didn't look like Colonel Sanders, like a crazy man, he would have a lot more votes.
Sadly, I could see him doing those KFC commercials.
Well, like, if he loses the election, which is most likely going to happen, although he had a big win today, or yesterday, whatever.
Like, I could just see him up there. We're going to pay for colleges. We're going to tax the rich. And we're going to have some of this wonderful Nashville chicken.
You buy one bucket, we give buckets for free to the whole neighborhood.
Everybody wins.
Everybody wins. But I hate politics so much because...
You got my vote sold, Tan. I'm just throwing it out
yeah,
there.
You might. It's just such a puppet show. It's a... whatever. I don't even have to say it. It's not an original point of view, but everyone's just lying to you. So get over it. It's like voting for someone shitty or someone less shitty. That's all it comes down to.
That's what it boils down to.
In the end, though, I always say to my friend at work, I say, when's the last time an actual politician affected your day-to-day life?
Clinton did a hell of a job. The economy was damn good. I mean, I think we talked about this before. Reagan and Clinton has been the only two in my lifetime where I said, wow. Everybody else is just like, okay.
I read a funny story today that people are petitioning Fetty Wap to sing the song Trap Girl at Nancy Reagan's funeral. This is the country we live in.
That Nancy was very high on the WAP.
Sometimes we're a little too free. But anyway, okay. Trump or Hitler? Okay, you ready? All right, there's 10, all right?
Let's begin.
All right. Number one. Okay, our country is in serious trouble. We don't have victories anymore. We used to have victories, but we don't have them.
Trump.
That is correct. You are one for one.
Boom.
Bing. Okay. As a Christian, I have no duty to allow myself to be cheated, but I have the duty to be a fighter for truth and justice.
I'm going to say Hitler.
Hitler is correct.
Woo!
I thought that was one that I could see people going, whoa, okay.
Yeah, yeah.
All right. Providence shows no mercy to weak nations, but recognizes the right of existence only of sound and strong nations.
I'm going to say Hitler.
Correct. Woo! Burley, you're 3 for 3. All right. I have a great relationship with the blacks.
Trump.
I have a great relationship with blacks. I've always had a great relationship with the blacks.
Trump.
Humanitarianism is the expression of stupidity.
This is a new one?
Yes.
Say that again?
Humanitarianism, I can't even say it, that might be my stupidity, is the expression of stupidity.
This one's a little tough. I'm going to go with Trump.
I'm sorry, bro. That was Adolf Hitler.
Ooh.
Adolf, the Fuhrer. The Fuhrer.
I was going to say Fuhrer. I was going
to. The Fuhrer of excitement.
I was going to say Fuhrer.
I am calling for a total and complete shutdown of a specific ethnicity entering the nation until our country's representatives can figure out what's going on.
Trump.
Donald Trump is it.
Woo!
Is it. Sometimes by losing a battle, you'll find a new way to win the war.
Hitler.
Adolf Hitler.
All right.
Is incorrect.
Oh.
Big Don in the house.
Ah.
Sorry. Number eight, God the Almighty has made our nation. By defending its existence, we are defending his work.
Trump.
Sorry.
Ooh.
Adolf.
Hmm.
Adolf Hitler. Hitler. The fact that your president, you're maybe president.
He's not my president.
You are confusing his quotes
mm-hmm.
with maybe the worst man on earth.
Hmm.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Our country will either be a world power or will not be at all.
Hitler.
Adolf Hitler is correct.
All right. All right. Back on the board. Back on the board.
All right. Last one, Berlo. You have two wrong. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So you can get a nice 70 here or a...
I can get
no, you can get 80. So a B, a nice B. B is good to bring home mm-hmm. to parents. C is not so good.
Yeah. C is the...
Yeah.
Well, you pass, but we're going to...
Daddy still hates you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
My dad loves me.
No, he doesn't. I don't get along with rich people. I get along with the middle class and the poor people better than I get along with the rich people.
That sounds like a Trumpism.
It's got to be a Trumpism. It is Donald Trump.
Woo-hoo!
Berlo, 80%. Congratulations. Congratulations.
I'm good at figuring out racists.
You passed the test. The saddest thing in the entire world is that that may be our president, and we just compared him to the Fuhrer.
Is it Trump or is it Hitler? We don't know.
I got things today. What do you got? You got anything?
I was kind of thinking about the couple episodes back where we talked about my being stopped by the cops and everything. And I kind of discussed how I somewhat told a little fib to my woman about, I'm home, and then had to turn around and call her up.
Did you use the dating tips from the last episode yet?
Not yet. I haven't found a good social to bring her
no
to.
No weenie roasts?
Not a one, which is odd.
I think the motto is no weenie roasts, start your own.
That's what I say. That was Hitler who said that.
No, he said no Jews, Rose. Start your own.
Oh, God. That's very confusing.
With that
very
one confusing. Word. And so, one word off. No big deal.
So I wanted to talk to you. I kind of talked to her. What is the biggest lie you got caught of by a woman you were with at the time?
Oof. Biggest lie.
Yeah.
I lied to the first girl I was ever with in bed that I was... not a virgin.
Okay.
I don't know why, because if you heard my... If you go back to SS Humiliation, you realize the first time I ever tried...
Boom, 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 boom.
Little Brennan... Yeah, little Brennan couldn't do it, but I remember saying prior to... whatever. I've been with one other person, blah, 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 blah. And eventually I had told her. So I think that's a pretty big lie.
Okay.
I could probably think of more.
I'll tell you.
On the spot, it's hard to come up with one.
I'll tell you my biggest one. I told one of my former girlfriends. So I was near the tail end of the relationship, I would say.
Ooh, I like that part of it, the tail end.
Yeah, yeah. She had a little attitude. I'm very laid back. She wasn't. And I got an invite to go out for the weekend up to Las Vegas.
Okay.
So I knew pretty much in just daily conversations with her. If I said, hey, some buddies of mine, are going to Las Vegas, can I go? She would have a hissy fit, pretty much said no, done some crap about, oh, you leave me alone to hang out with the boys, stuff like that. This is where the stage of our relationship was. So what I told her was, I was hanging out with a person I worked with at the time, which she couldn't stand, which I knew she wouldn't want to hang out with. I'm like, all right, I'm going to hang up with him up in Wilkes-Barre, Pennsylvania for the weekend. His parents were up there, and we're just going to hang out with some local friends or whatever. So I was talking. I told, like, my my dad, my brother was there at the time. My mom was in the room as well when we're having the conversation where I'm like, all right, I'm going to be heading out to Las Vegas in a couple weekends. And as we're having the conversations, we're literally saying, you know, don't talk too loud. You know, she's upstairs. I don't want her to know, blah, 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 blah. Go out, have the weekend, had fun. You know, I didn't cheat on her, but went out, did guys stuff, you know, gambled, ate a lot, partied, all that fun stuff. I text her around where I'm like, I'm ready, as I'm flying back, you know, hey, I'm coming back soon, blah, blah, blah. She's like, yeah, I want to talk to you. And I get back, and she's like, so you went to Vegas, huh?
Mm.
And I'm kind of looking at her, and I'm
how'd
like,
she catch you?
What happened was she was over my parents' house to use the internet because she used to do eBay. And my mom was there, and she came upstairs, and she's like, yeah, Mike's up in Wilkes-Barre with his friend and all.
Oh, I thought he said he was going to Las Vegas for the weekend, as my mom would put it.
So I get home. I'm a little furious with my mom. I just look at her. I'm like, well, thank you very much.
Yeah.
I leave the room. I start dealing with the girl upstairs. I'm living with the parents at the time, by the way. So I'm dealing with that. I'm dealing with her crap. I go downstairs. Now my dad's furious. You know, he's like, you respect your mother. You don't say that to your mother. You apologize to your mother. So I gave the whole, I'm sorry, Mom. I'm forced to apologize because I don't have anywhere to go. But at the same time, you know damn right well I'm not apologizing to you. So I go back upstairs, start dealing with the girlfriend again. My mom comes upstairs and she starts trying to explain to her, you know, I just told her I thought you were in Las Vegas. So she didn't really know you were in Las Vegas. So it was, I didn't really tell her that you were in Las Vegas. And I'm looking at her like, and she's saying it in front of her. And I'm looking at her like, how is this conversation helping the two of us right now?
Yes.
Because she was clearly in the room when we said, I don't want her to know. And then she know, and it's kind of good in a way. It kind of was near the tail on the relationship. And as we were arguing, I pretty much told her straight to her face. I'm like, you know why I lied? Because if I told you the truth, you wouldn't let me go to the damn place just to have some fun. Because you don't into that. But the one part of the argument, which was kind of fun, she's like, so you went to Las Vegas with a bunch of guys. I'm like, yeah. Are you gay?
Yes. Good night.
Yeah.
Go away. Yeah.
That's what all gay men do. They can't have sex in their state. It's only legal in Las Vegas. That's why men have weekends in Las Vegas to have tons of gay sex and then come back to their girlfriends.
Which is why you're going to Vegas, right?
Nah, I'm there. I'm there every weekend, babe.
No, it's really, I wish I had a better lie. I got to think about. Maybe I'll think about that for next week.
All right.
Definitely think I got maybe a couple. But the. Your situation went okay, right? Your arrest thing went okay?
Yeah. The only sucky part was, so they got rid of the DWI. They got rid of the reckless driving. They're like, well, we want you to plead guilty to lamp lights. And I'm like, all right, I'm fine with that. But what I didn't know was since I technically in court, which is just usually just a $56 fine for lights, now I had to pay the court fees since I'm pleading guilty in court.
You got
to
pay the judge's salary.
You're goddamn kidding me.
They got you by the balls.
Yeah. And I still got to get it. I got to get the lights fixed. I might have to get a new bumper because of it. Because, the light structure is completely broken.
Stop pouring into things.
But I like to. I don't like using my brakes. Those are expensive.
So, I was thinking about arrests, right?
Okay.
I'm thinking about, you know, like celebrities get arrested. We don't really hear about it a lot of times.
Mm-hmm.
So, I have a little bit here. I'm going to give you a celebrity.
Okay.
I'm going to give you an over-under on how many times they've been arrested.
And I
then,
like this.
And then at the end, I'm going to read you maybe a little rap sheet on them.
Okay? All right.
Charles Barkley is our first contestant on over-under arrest. I don't even know what to call this, but okay. The over-under is 3.
Over.
The over is correct.
Yeah.
Four arrests he's had.
I do know of one. Like, I listened to Philly Sports Station. And they talked about the story how, like, he was in a bar and some guy tried some shit with him. And he just literally picked up the guy and threw him through a window. And the cops went, when the cops showed up, he's like, he asked for it. He wanted a piece of me. He took a piece of the window.
All right. Would you like to know his rap sheet?
Go ahead.
The basketball legend has been anything but civilized in the past, no doubt hurting his alleged dreams of one day running for governor in Alabama. I'd vote for him. At this point,
it's Alabama.
He tells the
care.
Truth, at least.
Yeah.
His feisty on-court demeanor also extended outside the lines, as the former athlete has chalked up a variety of arrests, the most puzzling of which occurred on New Year's Eve 2008 when Barkley was arrested on drunk driving charges. When he got back to the DUI task force command post, Barkley reportedly told police, "I was going to drive around the corner and get oral sex." He then told the civilian, "I'll tattoo your name on my ass."
Well, you know, if I'm going to go through a DUI and I'm supposed to get oral sex, I'm very forgetful. So if I'm going to leave a note, I want to make sure it doesn't, like, erase.
Right, right. Hold on, my webpage is down. Hold on, I have this all prepared.
Technical difficulties, please stand by. That's all I got.
No, keep going, because that'll never be used.
Never? You promise?
All right. We're back. That'll never be used anywhere against you. All right. So I'm just going to call random celebrities that you may or may not have. Well, you've okay. heard of them. Let's go with Miss Amy Winehouse, okay. who is no longer with us.
Late.
All right. The over-under is...
Okay.
Six.
Six. That's a good Vegas number. Considering she's a celebrity and it's mostly, like, drug stuff, I'm going to go under.
Michael Berlo, you are correct. Ooh, with yeah. five. Mm-hmm. Five arrests she's had. Mm-hmm. The talented R&B...
I'm going to say this. 10 years from now, I'm keeping the under.
The R&B singer, she's been arrested a total of five times for everything from smoking crack to hitting a woman in the eye at the 2008 Prince's Ball to perverting the course of justice. However, the singer is now reportedly clean. No, she's not.
Well, technically she's clean.
Oh, she's clean.
And dirt clean.
I mean, they have eaten her clean off
yeah.
the bone.
Yeah.
Okay. That's terrible.
She got arrested again? What the...
Right.
Is there heaven prison?
All right, let's give it up for Mr. Tiger Blood himself, Charlie Sheen.
Ooh.
Charlie Sheen. The over-under, Michael Berlo.
All right.
Is eight.
He loves his prostitutes. He loves his drugs.
He does.
He gets drunk a lot.
He does that.
He's got the HIV right now, doesn't he?
Supposedly.
Okay.
Yep.
That adds to the calculation of how many times you get arrested.
Over-under is eight, Michael Berlo. Sitting at eight, the most arrested celebrities over-under pool, first time on Verbal Shenanigans, is what?
I'm going to go against the odds and say under.
Michael Berlo, you are 3 for 3. I tried to throw a little curveball. He's only been arrested three times.
Wow.
Only been arrested three times. Okay. He allegedly found actor naked, intoxicated with a porn star locked in the bathroom.
Not bad.
The actor has a long history of drug problems, cocaine overdose. Michael Berlo, nice job. That was a trick shot at you, and you handled it well.
Thank you. I know more about celebrity arrests than I do Trump and Hitler.
Than you do normal life?
Well, that too.
All right. One of my favorites.
All right.
R. Kelly.
Mr. Peabody.
Yeah. R. Kelly. The over-under is two. Two. Mm-hmm.
I got to try over.
But Michael Burley, you are correct again. You are like 4 for 4 or something like that.
That's how
R. Works. Kelly has been arrested 3 times. Okay. Of course, when he was allegedly peeing on a 14-year-old girl, he was arrested in 2003 for child pornography, but the charges were dropped. Wow.
Wow.
Wow. He's a classy citizen.
Mm-hmm.
Michael Burlow, this is player's choice.
Player's right. choice.
You get to choose between two celebrities.
I picked the Pope, and I'm going to say under.
No. I'm going to give you two hard ones here. Bobby Brown.
Okay.
Okay. You know he's littered with news stories. Or DMX.
I'm going to go with Bobby Brown. I'm old school.
Okay. Hold on. Hold on. Okay. Bobby Brown. Got him. Got him.
All right.
The over-under is six.
I had a feeling that was going to be the number two. Well, I know Whitney doesn't have to worry about getting arrested anymore. I'm going to go under.
Michael Burlow.
Yes.
You are wrong. Bobby Brown's been arrested 7 times.
The streak's over.
Gaining fame as a member of the boy band New Edition, Bobby Brown may be better known as the Bad Boy, ex-husband of Whitney Houston. Brown was arrested in 2003 for misdemeanor battery for hitting Houston. Prior to that, he had been caught by the cops and arrested for speeding, driving with no license, and marijuana. Seven arrests.
Flew too close to the sun on this.
You were killing it. All right. Bringing us to the end. Okay.
I got 280% on the day.
All right. Well, there's two more. There's two more. Okay. O.J. Simpson is back. Back in the news. Back in the
great TV show.
I heard
by the
show's
way.
Great. Haven't watched it yet. I'm very excited to. Mr. O.J. Simpson himself.
Okay.
Over under is 3.
Huh. That's an interesting one. Well, I know one I'm aware of. Well, actually, 2. The whole not guilty and the whole guilty one. So we know we're at 2.
Okay.
So if there's another one, by rule, you would have to have a 4th one because you have even.
Mm-hmm.
That's an interesting question, because I know he beat Nicole a lot, but he got away with it a lot as well.
Okay.
I'm just trying to analyze.
I know, that's
answer.
What you're supposed to be doing, yeah. Considering it's radio.
Yeah. So, I gotta say over.
Michael Burlow.
Yes.
In celebrity arrest over under.
Mm-hmm.
You are correct with 5 arrests for O.J. Okay. 5, and there may be one coming up soon, considering that knife was found.
That is like the weirdest story, though. So it's weird. Like, well, I was doing construction on the place, and I found a knife, so I gave it to a cop. And the cop decided to hold on to it for like 20-some-odd years. Then he saw a great show on FX, and he's like, oh, yeah, I got the knife.
I heard it's great, the show.
It's very good. Cuba Gooding, John Travolta.
Schwimmer.
Yeah, he's done an amazing job. The girl from American Horror Story, she does an incredible job as Marcia Clark. I mean, it's amazing. You go through all that, you figure every part about it, it'd just be like, you're just rerunning everything I saw. And they actually showed the drama. The one thing I really liked was they kind of showed the backstory of how the Cardassians.
Thank you, Obi.
The Cardassians, how the kids kind of grown into that fame and became the personas that they are now, how they kind of showed the scenes where it's like, Daddy's on TV! The Cardassians are famous! We're famous! We're famous! And then they get like, they go to a restaurant, it's like, oh, Mr. Kardashian, we're just going to give you a table, even though it's an hour away. We're famous! Look at us, Daddy! We're famous! And you kind of see where the ego grew from that.
Yes. All right, you ready for your last one?
Let's go.
Martin Sheen.
Martin Sheen. Hmm.
Martin Sheen.
Mm-hmm.
Over under is 50.
50?
50.
5-0.
5 with 0 attached to it.
Really? I mean, a number so high, your first thought is it has to be a trick question, ergo it's up. But really, 50 for somebody, how's that humanly possible? And they're still walking around, they're still celebrity. Oh, God.
Did I just throw that out there to make you go left? Or did I just throw it out there to give you a hint? Which one is it?
You know what? Since I'm going to still get a passing grade regardless, I got to try for it. Let's go over.
Michael Berlew.
Yeah.
Over is correct.
Wow.
66 total arrests for Martin Sheen. The actor,
it's not even like 51. It's like you lowballed that number.
He admitted in 2009 to being put in handcuffs a whopping 66 times. Of course, his crime of choice happens to be protest. His most recent arrest in 2007 was for trespassing on a Nevada nuclear test facility.
Yeah.
His first arrest dates back to 1986, where he's protesting Ronald Reagan's Star Wars initiative.
Well, where was he trespassing on? Was he in space?
I don't know. I don't know. Maybe he was protesting Jar Jar Binks, the idea. But anyway,
Mr. Reagan,
Michael Berlew, well done on our first. I think I might bring that bit back. I might bring it back.
That sounds like something.
Arrested celebrities, over or under, but you know what? I had another thing, but I think it's time to go.
I think so.
I think it's time to give our audience a break of our goddamn voices.
We don't want
to
do another 2.5 hour show.
No, we could, and this one might be pushing it. But you know what? Again, screw yourself.
Hey, screw yourself. If you like us, you like us. If you don't, stop.
If you don't, you show it. You have already shown it.
Yeah.
So it is what it is. No, I'm just kidding. We love you, people. Please give us some questions or something to talk about. I have an idea. Maybe we'll do a little March Madness thing. I got an idea on that.
Yeah, we discussed something.
It's time to wrap it up. Michael Berlew, anything to promote?
I will do my page. Like I said, I will be looking for more dates coming up, so facebook.com/theburl721. Got a lot of positive feedback from tonight on The Walking Dead, which I'm happy about. Got a lot of different people showing that they're looking at it, not just glancing at it, but actually reading it and enjoying it. So you should enjoy it too. TheBurl721 on Facebook.
All right. And I am going to promote, I don't know what I'm going to promote. I think I'm going to just, I'm just going to promote March 18th. I'll be at Reds. Although this might be up by then, whatever. I'll be at Reds for the Irish comedy show. And I want to promote, I guess that's it. Oh, yes, that's what I wanted to promote. I knew I had something. If you watch a restaurant, what is it, Restaurant Impossible or Makeover?
Yeah.
We used to do a open mic at the Starlight in West Orange.
Mm-hmm.
Rich McDonald, that was his open mic, a former guest. But they did a whole episode where they take it over, so I was kind of interested. So I would say if you go on demand, watch that, and they did that, so that would be kind of cool. Food Network came in. But I want to thank...
Yeah, comedy went out, too.
Yeah, I don't know if it's coming back. But I want to thank our guest, Harley Spiller, the inspector collector, and listen,
I was going to say Inspector Gadget.
Leave a review for us. It really helps us get populated. And I guess that's about it, guys. Life is funny. Laugh at it. Keep the wind at your back. This was a lot of fun tonight. Good night, guys.
Bye.